Welcome to the first of two extra shows brought to you by theactivephotographer.com. These are in addition to the regular weekly podcast and feature conversations I recorded live at Focus on Imaging 2011. There's a lot to get through, so each recording will lead into the next. In this edition, I'm talking with Fujifilm cameras, Kata bags, Black Rapid camera straps, eFotozine photography website, Moo.com online stationery, and Manfrotto camera supports. For links to all these companies, check out the show notes at theactivephotographer.com. I'm with Lorraine Lobdell over at the Black Rapid camera strap stand. It says everything right there, basically. Now, I want to speak to you, Lorraine, about these straps because I've been carrying one of yours around for the last day and a half. I know a lot of people have been looking at them. They're pretty cool. They look modern. They look strong. What is it that you are showing people here?
So we're showing a camera strap that is completely changing the camera industry and how you shoot and how you wear your camera. We're taking the weight of the camera from off of your neck, and we're putting it on your shoulder and distributing it to across your body to your hip, and so your camera hangs upside down on your right hip.
And there are a number of configurations that we've got here. The one that I've got is the R Sport.
RS Sport.
The
it's
RS
our
Sport.
Newest strap here.
And, I mean, a lot of people that will have seen the likes of probably David Hobby, Chase Jarvis, who do a lot of stuff online. I'm sure I've seen some guy over in the States having his camera hanging upside down, and I probably thought, oh, that's a clever invention, and I maybe didn't register. I know I've seen them out there, but it is an obvious and practical kind of arrangement. Tell me a bit about the fastenings itself.
Yeah, the hardware on the strap is one of the most unique parts about it. We have a fastener which connects into the tripod socket of any camera. And then after that, we have a connector, which is a locking, swiveling carabiner system. And so your fastener will not unscrew, and your camera strap won't tangle up.
And something that you told me yesterday when we were first chatting about this, to actually lock the screw into the base of the camera, obviously you'd lock it sort of finger tight, but then you'd sort of think about getting pliers or, a screwdriver through the hole to do it. But the strength of the carabiners is such that you can actually use that as a pivot to close it up.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Just put the carabiner onto the fastener and use it to tighten.
And the brake strength on that was something ridiculous, wasn't it?
750
kilos.
Kilos,
isn't it?
Yes.
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, what we've got in front of here is the RSDR1, which is a double strap. It has a chest buckle clip as well, but it has the option to hold two cameras, one each side.
Correct. So it has the buckle in front that you can unsnap, and in the back where it connects in your back, it's by Velcro, so you just unsnap the Velcro, and then the side with the R, which is the right side of the strap, put that over your head and it becomes a single strap. So,
and of course, in a practical sense, this particular product is going to appeal to sports shooters, social photographers, wedding photographers. You'd have, say, a telephoto, so 80 to 300 or something on one side, a wide angle standard zoom on the other.
Exactly.
You don't want to be juggling bags and cases.
No. And so many photographers that we know of that carry two cameras, they end up putting the straps crisscross over their neck and practically choking themselves in the process
We've
of
all
getting
done
the
it.
Shot.
Yeah. And one of the other sort of neat features on all of these straps that I was impressed when I first saw them were these clips that are sort of halfway as a sort of a stay, as a guide sort of stopper.
And these guys are called bumpers, and there's one in front and one in back of the camera. So the one in the back stops your camera from going back any further, and the bumper in the front comes down, and if you put it against the other bumper in the camera, it keeps your camera in place.
So you should probably, just to re-emphasize that, the webbing strap goes through the attachment that connects the carabiner, but when you have the top bumper unfastened, you just clip it further up, you have the full length of that strap.
Correct.
So quickly whip the camera up, so it's a seamless, there's no, like you say, there's
exactly.
No snagging, there's no
exactly.
Anything like that.
Yeah. So the camera glides on the webbing instead of being attached to the webbing.
Excellent. I mean, they are strong looking product. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, people often think, oh, I'm going to get a camera strap. They'll get something too thin. They wonder why their necks or their shoulders start to ache. Exactly. It is worth spending out on a decent piece of kit that is going
to
last.
It's amazing. You'll only need to buy one for your entire career, although there's a lot of really wonderful straps that are coming out with, we have new inventions coming out all the time, and there's just different fashions, different ways of wearing the strap. We have a woman's strap that's contoured for a woman's body, and it also has floral pattern on the design, so it's a little bit more fashionable for women to wear. And that's been really nice.
One interesting point that I just want to go back to, because the practicality is very important, the fact that you've catered for the female market, which is a very overlooked thing. It's the same with rucksack manufacturers. Yeah. Straight straps, not so great for anyone who's not sort of rake thin, whether they're male, female, or what. But the screw that goes into the base of the camera, you mentioned something yesterday regarding Manfrotto tripods and their fastenings on their quick release plates.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, so we have a Fastenar T1, and that's tripod plate one, and it replaces the D-ring in the Manfrotto RC2 plate. So it's a weight bearing D-ring, so you just pop that D-ring out that comes with the tripod plate, and you put ours in, our new fastener, and that way you can go directly from your R strap, unhook, and then go directly to your tripod plate and back out.
Excellent. Well, I'm certainly going to carry on testing these products, because I already I'm very keen. I mean, this is a trade show, of course. I'm very keen to get out of an expo into the real world. I'm going to be shooting some mountain bike stuff in the next few weeks, so that's going to be interesting. Give us a link. Tell us where we should go to have a look at all the product range.
Go to www.blackrapid.com.
I'm going to link to that in the show notes, because we've got the lady doing the announcements over the top.
Excellent.
Lorraine, thank you very much
for
your time.
Thank you very much.
And we'll catch up soon.
Excellent.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Here on the Manfrotto stand with Alberto Campello, if I've got that right. We've got the music in the background. The reason I wanted to talk to you on this stand today is regular listeners will know that I'm a big fan of Manfrotto. I'm sort of a big advocate of super clamps and magic arms, this sort of thing. But one thing I have mentioned in the past is standard tripods. Now, I use the 055 Pro B. Mm-hmm. B, I gather, standing for black, because at that time you could have a silver and black version. What I want to talk to you about today is when photographers want to travel lighter, mm-hmm. but they have to think about a compromise between the height of a standard, their everyday tripod, and a smaller sort of tabletop or sort of quarter-length tripod. We have carbon fiber technology, we have regular aluminium. Where do we start? We're stood here with a huge range of monopods, tripods, ball and socket, pan and tilt heads, everything you could possibly think of. But where do you start when thinking about how to make that compromise on your kit?
Yeah, first of all, you have to start comparing aluminium to carbon fiber, right? So mm-hmm. you said that aluminium is quite heavier mm-hmm. than carbon fiber. Obviously, carbon fiber is much more expensive, and this is the first choice. So if you want something very light, extremely light, you have to go sure on carbon fiber mm-hmm. solution. Then you have to compare three section or four section. You mean that you want something very compact, and mm-hmm. for instance, here we can see that you have the same tripod, 055 6 Pro 3 and 6 Pro 4, mm-hmm. exactly the same tripod with three section or four section.
Right.
As you can see, there are differences in terms of compactness.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want extremely light product and very compact, you have to go to four section compared to a three section one.
And but the cost difference here, we're only talking maybe £20. There's not a lot of difference between those
between
two, for example.
Between three section and four section, mm. yes. Yeah. Between aluminium and carbon fiber, it's quite a big difference.
Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah.
The thing that you have to consider is that the more section you have in the tripod, the more shaking you could have,
yeah.
right? So, as you said, it's a very difficult solution. It's a compromise between stability, lightness, and compactness.
And
right?
I think it's one of those things, a lot of people, when they set up a tripod, they don't think along practical terms in terms of starting with the higher sections of the leg, the thicker sections. A lot of people will drop down the lower sections, then they'll lift up the center column, and that is just about the worst possible combination.
Sure. You have to think about that. if you take out the column, take the column up, mm-hmm. obviously there are some vibration, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you have four section compared to a three section, you have just a little bit more shaky. So you should consider to use the tripod with your high, perfect high, without taking the column up. And if you have a chance to use all section, and the last one is maybe the last solution that you have to use, right? Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so I'm now going to ask you a very direct question about my immediate uses. I have some work coming up in a couple of months, which means I'm going to be climbing up hills. I'm going to be long range walking, I'm doing rock climbing and kayaking. Mm-hmm. So I want something that's not necessarily as large as my original 055. Something that is going to be compact, it's not going to take a lot of room in my pack. Where would I start? And we'll talk about heads in a moment, because of course that's an important consideration as well. But where would I start?
You have to start from your equipment. I asked you before about your equipment, your lenses, and you have to consider which kind of lenses you are used to use. And if you use very long lenses and compare the weight of your equipment compared to the maximum payload of the tripod.
Yeah.
So for instance, we saw the 055, 6x3, 6x4, but at the same time we have in our collection the 190. That is exactly the same product, just a little bit more smaller. And here we have also the 196x3 and 6x4, 3 section, 4 section, and we have some models, considering that you have the pro column, you know, the pro column that can allow you to go on horizontal position, but at the same time we have the same tripod without the pro column. So for instance, you can see that the same tripod with or without the pro column can save space.
And talking sort of a couple of inches, maybe something like that. And it all adds up. It's a bit like camping equipment. You know, you get the lightest kit if you're going on a long expedition, and you have to just bear in mind how 2 days into the trip, how that's going to feel on your back.
Exactly. So,
okay.
For instance, the good solution to replace to having such a good product, because the 190 is a very good product, well performing, but is just a little bit more compact than a 055. This 196x4 is a very good solution for traveling.
Okay, so let's just briefly talk about heads, because of course all these tripods, as we look at them, and a lot of people will know, you have the tripod, it has the threaded section to attach. You wouldn't want to necessarily attach your camera straight onto that. You want an attachment for that. There is a whole range,
huge range. The head tripod, but most of all the head, you have to choose the head thinking about what's your kind of picture that you are used to take, right?
Yeah.
So there are some heads called three-way heads. That is this one, that you have three knobs, right? So these heads are very precise because can allow you to move just one movement, more movement separate from the other, right? And this can allow you to exactly do the frame, the picture you want, decide what will be in your frame. Very precision, but at the same time they are not very fast to set up, right? Because you have to move three knobs.
So
maybe a three-way head is a perfect choice if you are taking architectural photography or a landscape, for instance. But at the same time we have joystick head. A joystick head is exactly the opposite. So it's a head that you can move very fast because you have just one locking system.
And that's a hand-operated, like a trigger system.
For sport photography, weddings or whatever, in which you need to be fast, this is the perfect solution. But at the same time, you cannot move separated just the panoramic or the tilt or the level.
So that's essentially a ball and socket head, but with an additional trigger grip for speed and
Exactly. So three-way head, very precise, no fast. Joystick head, very fast, less precise. Mm-hmm. And then you have center board like this, yeah. That is a compromise. It's an in-between solution, right? Because you have a knob for panoramic.
And these are a lot smaller than the knobs that we were looking at on the other heads here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have one locking system for the center ball. And then the friction control, very important when you use long lenses.
Yeah.
But this solution can allow you to be very fast, but at the same time, you want to move just the panoramic, you can, right? So it's more precise than a joystick, less precise than a three-way head, but it's very fast. So you have to keep in mind what kind of photography you are taking, what kind of picture you are taking, and considering that, you have to choose the tripod and the head.
So, okay, let's kind of have a sort of a what if. Someone's going on holiday or photo expedition this summer, they're shooting on a medium range zoom on their SLR, they want something small. I'm guessing from what you've said, we'd be looking at something like the 190, the smaller version.
The 6 Pro 4 with a center ball.
The center ball head, it's going to be the best compromise that... And of course, these heads are magnesium, so they're tough. They're designed still to be thrown around if if that's how you treat them.
In the U range, we have a center ball head in magnesium, like the one I showed you before, and a center ball head in aluminium. The perfect match is a carbon fiber tripod with a magnesium head, mm-hmm. right? Aluminium tripod with aluminium head to maximize the lightness and performances. So, for instance, a center ball head in magnesium is a perfect match with a Y96 Pro 4 for traveling and use a standard zoom.
And that's something that I was going to ask you is, obviously some of these heads are very large, they're too big for a lot of people's purposes. People think, oh, that's a great head, I'm going to put it on, and it's not right. How does someone go about matching in terms of, is there a guideline between how big the head should be on the tripod mount?
Sure, you have to check how big the head is. You see, for instance, the code of the head is 054. Mm-hmm. It means that it belongs to the 05 family, that is a professional family of Manfrotto, but it's size 4.
Right,
and size
okay.
4 is the perfect match for the 190.
Okay.
At the same time, we had the 057 carbon fiber tripod that is larger than a 055 because it's size 7, that perfectly match with the same center ball head that the code has size 7. Okay.
It's such an obvious thing, but a lot of people don't think about that.
I know.
I'm sure you've probably seen enough people, and you'll look at their setup and you think, that's, you know, they may be posting a YouTube video, and you think you're instructing people, but that's the wrong setup to begin with.
I know, and the company is trying to push this message to people in the catalog, in the brochure, and the website, so we can really having the perfect match between tripod and head.
Excellent. Well, look, I've learned something. Again, I've probably said this on other recordings at the show because you never do stop learning. Give us a link to the website, the best place people can go to find out, see your product range. And
yeah, it's www.manfrotto.com.
Okay.
And I'll see everything.
Excellent. Well, I'll be linking the show notes to this show as well. But I thank you very much for your time. I appreciate
that. Welcome.
And of course, anyone that has any questions, obviously, can get in touch with Manfrotto directly, or of course, such as it is, I'm happy to offer advice. Of course, I'm not an employee of Manfrotto. I don't know half as much as you guys do, so I would probably direct them back again. But thanks again for your time.
You're welcome.
Cheers. I'm on the cutter stand here with Belina Israel, and what I wanted to talk to you about today, Belina, is I'm very aware of Katter as a brand. I know I've been looking at your roller cases for lighting kits and what have you, but something that's on your stand this year is a real development and a growth in the lines that you're producing. Now, there are several things that I'd like to talk to you about. One, you've got immediately by us here the rucksacks, pouches, what have you, but you've also got a National Geographic range, but you've also got some waterproof covers, which listeners will know when I'm out and about, it's one of the biggest things that I have to kind of deal with. So let's just have a little walk around, and I'll just let you take me wherever you want and tell me about whatever you want to talk about first.
Okay, so very simply, in the last 2 years we've undergone a huge revolution, and it's the lightweight protection revolution. Kata have always made comparatively light cases with extreme protection, and everybody knows that when you talk Kata, you know that you're getting the best protection out there. What we've changed is that now we're actually promising to be the lightest, most protective bags. And we've created three dedicated lines for different types of users. We have the D-Light for the more low-end consumers, first-timers. They will get the first taste of Kata and why lightweight protection is so important. Then we have the Pro-Light, which is dedicated for professionals, designed down to the smallest need, designed around the photographer, not around the camera. Super ergonomic solutions, protection second to none. This will be our most protective line. And everything in these bags is professional gear. There's no room for personal gear. We know that pros will not waste an inch on anything else. And our last line is our flagship line, the Ultralight line. This is our lightest line, and we're using the most advanced materials and technologies and not compromising on anything.
Okay.
So, and this will appeal to both high-end amateurs and professionals. Mm-hmm. And obviously when you're out there looking for a bag, lightweight is very important, but protection is just as important. This is after 10 years of us checking the market. These are the two most important things for cameramen. Even if they don't realize it, this is an unconscious need. They will pick up the bag to see how heavy it is.
Yeah.
They will feel the ruggedness and the build of the bag and understand its protection. They won't articulate it when they walk in and say, I need a lightweight protective bag.
but know
this is something that will make their decision for them. We guarantee this on all our bags. Actually, if you buy a Kata bag and within a month find a bag that you feel is lighter and more protective, we give you your money back.
That's a good reassurance.
Is Kata, not our distributors in the world. It's the mother company backing up our promise to the market. So I think this revolution has proven to be a huge success. You can see the difference also in the designs. We've got a lot of new technologies that we've created from nothing, patented, to achieve this. If it's how do you actually make a bag a lot lighter and then reinforce it to maintain the protection level that you're used to from Kata.
Well, let's take as a reference point. Obviously, I'm a day-to-day professional photographer, but a lot of people listening are going to be serious enthusiasts, weekend photographers,
yes,
people that want to protect their cameras when they take the dog for a walk. Show me something that is going to sort of hit that sort of demographic.
Well, for instance, our Access holsters, they look very small and compact, because that's the advantage of a holster, is you carry just your camera with the lens attached. So basically the bag is designed to add as little bulk to that as possible. Our accesses have nice features that are really unique to us. We have the quick one-handed top opening, grab and pull your camera out to shoot. Now, just around the lens, you'll see we have two big pockets. On the outside, they're flat, but when you open them up, they actually expand inwards.
Yeah.
And all that space around the lens that is usually wasted allows you to store another lens, another flash, and really take a lot of gear in a very small, compact case.
And that's one of the things that strikes me about this, where in fact there are two things. One, from the outside, it doesn't scream camera case, which
no,
a lot of bags do. And the second thing is, with the modern materials and the colours, the inside, it's a bright shock of yellow. It's, you know, it's fun to look at. I mean, I know that sounds very silly, but so many bags and cases are dull that you kind of just think, oh, this is a camera bag. But this actually has more of a contemporary sort of modern sort of feel to it.
The outside, you're right. The outside, we try to maintain a very low-key profile so that it doesn't shout out, I'm a camera bag. And this gets very important when you're traveling big backpacks or roller cases. You don't want to be targeted as a photographer, because the moment you're targeted, the airlines are going to milk you for any penny you've got, because you're going to pay for the extra weight. The inside, the bright yellow, is our trademark. This has been going with, well, accompanying us for from day one. Mm-hmm. And it's not only because it's a funky color, but it's actually an ergonomic reason. This is the best background color for your gear. In any lighting condition, obviously most of your gear is black, you're going to see exactly what's in the bag and not waste time taking things out looking for something that isn't in the
bag.
People
wouldn't think about that,
no.
Of course. Yeah.
We do sometimes get people saying we don't like yellow because yellow gets dirty. We obviously point out that any colour gets dirty. You just see it first on the yellow and then you actually will clean the bag and won't let the dirt reach your gear.
But it shows that they're getting out there and taking pictures. You know, if it was immaculately clean, you know.
Yeah.
And this just, I've got the display tag here. Yeah. The weight of this particular bag, is that correct? 0.48 of a kilo?
Yes.
Which is 1.10 pounds. So it's not a... There's
it
no weight to it.
It weighs practically nothing. And how do we do this? We have a lot of little things, but let's say the main things are the material. Obviously, the bags are made of material and foam.
Mm-hmm.
The materials we are using come from the parachute world, ripstop nylon.
Yeah.
Very strong but thin and rugged material. And on the inside, we're using Aeriform foam, which was a very simple idea, but nobody seemed to think of it before. If you look in the light, you'll see that the foam is perforated.
Oh,
by
yes,
simply
yeah.
removing 40% of the surface of the foam, we reduce the weight considerably.
That's clever.
And we don't actually compromise the functionality of the foam. So we get the protection, but we reduce a lot of weight in what creates most of the bag.
Okay. Well, I mean, that is a starting point. I think that's the one we've got here is the Access Dash 17PL. I'll ask you for a link to your website at the end of this, but let's go from this now to the National Geographic branded, because taking that kind of contemporary streetwise kind of feel and protection, the National Geographic range is kind of a step further towards the lifestyle.
Yes, National Geographic really are not associated with camera bags. If you look at National Geographic, you think, wow, that's just a cool fashion bag. That's a great everyday backpack or satchel or a small tote bag. And we have three collections in National Geographic, each with a different styling.
Yeah.
They're all camera plus bags. There's always room for your camera, but it can be an everyday bag, and only when you want to carry a camera with you put the camera insert in, which you see here. For instance, we have camera inserts in each that will protect the camera with a lens attached and probably one more lens or a flash.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic kit can be just popped into the bag when necessary and when not, taken out and used as an everyday bag.
And this range that we've got in front of us here, this is
the Earth Explorer.
And it's a very traditional kind of camel sand kind of...
Yes, I like to call it our Indiana Jones style.
That is, you know, that's
very
a better...
Very adventurous.
Yeah. Okay. And then what we've got to the right of this is, as I was walking past, this is what initially grabbed my attention. And in particular, too, I mean, there's a number of bags here which look, as you say, just like a leisure sort of satchel or rucksack. But there are two models that I'd like to talk about. There's the smaller one here and then the slightly larger one below.
Yeah, our two satchels are great everyday satchels. There's the small one will hold an iPad and a basic camera setup and room for all the other things you would carry with you every day. The larger one will hold up to a 15-inch laptop, your paperwork. This is a great school bag, work bag. And when you like, you pop the insert in with your camera setup in it. This is called the Walkabout Collection, and this is a more urban look.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came from Indiana Jones and we said Sex in the City.
But this is still a tough canvas. It's
all are made of cotton.
Mm-hmm.
They all have the retro feel. We're all natural materials, as little as possible artificial or industrial treatments. So very environmentally friendly. We're using nickel-free brass buckles. All sorts of nice leather accents to give a high-end feel.
And then the thing that sort of appeals to me about this is, for example, if I'm going off to record a podcast, do an interview with someone, for example, and I don't want to be taking my D3, I don't want to be taking my kit, if all I want is my point-and-shoot camera, my recorder, what have you,
you've got
I
a nice little padded pocket to fit your point and shoot.
But it sits, the exterior of the bag, the flap, it sits in such a way that it could just be a regular, you might call a man bag.
We have quite a few man bags in both collections. And this is the design. The idea is really, it doesn't have to appeal just for photographers. It's designed to appeal to a much wider range of clients. And at the end of the day, if you fall in love with the bag, you're going to want it if you have a camera or if you don't.
Well, this one here, the first thing I thought about, the one that's just
that's
in the middle here.
Our tote bag is a fantastic girl bag,
beach
bag.
I was going to say, it, as a day-to-day, I can sort of imagine any number of people going anything from the library to the, like, say, yes, the beach. Nothing to do with photography, but it's just smart and practical.
Smart and practical, and with the insert. So there's always the attention. But then again, I use my insert for makeup or for my laptop accessories, and not necessarily always for my camera.
No. But it's nice to have the option to so many products that we have at the show, not just in cases and bags, just generally, it's all about functionality.
Yes.
I was talking to, I forget who it was now, someone else in another stand, and we were saying, the thing about photographers, we're very resourceful. If a product doesn't quite do what we want, we will adjust it, we will strap things to it, we will tape stuff around, whatever it needs be.
Yes.
Well, let's go from that point then to the water.
Let me just mention collection in National Geographic, brand new. You saw all the monkeys on our stand?
Oh, yes, yeah.
So it's the Africa collection.
Okay.
And this is very African styled, very high end fashion, with a fun Africa lining on inside.
Oh, right, yeah.
You see there?
Ah, okay. So that's another step, even further along.
Even further along. But what we do is we have the prototypes, like the two that you've marked out, we have in all these styles. And we believe that when you're talking fashion, you have to give a much wider range. Some people will love this color, some people will love that, some people will like that lining. But the basic setup is exactly the same in all.
That's a really good sort of approach to design as well. I suppose it's you know the whole kind of eco thing. You're saving on machining cost, the power that drives it, and it means that you're making the most of your resources.
Yes. So let's go rain.
Okay. Yeah, so from the comfort and protection of bags, and hopefully people can... we've got people on the on one software in the background doing a presentation. But what we've got here is your waterproof covers for cameras. And this is something that I'm hopefully going to be having a look at, testing and seeing what I can do with this.
Tell you the story of the Elements cover. Basically, people kept on saying that they would like rain protection. They use a plastic bag under an umbrella, it makes it a little difficult. That was about 10 years ago. I used to be a designer at Kata, and in 5 minutes I had an idea. I pulled it together, and this is still the product that we're selling today. And it's very, very simple. It's just a big transparent area that allows you to see all the controls and the screen on the camera. Two sleeves with pull tight option. And this is actually like when you go skiing. Obviously, you've pulled one hand tight, you want to pull the other one tight to seal off completely. You can use your teeth because it's a very simple system that allows you, with no effort at all, to tighten up. And the zipper all along the bottom will close off completely if it's handheld, or secure itself around the tripod head. It's made of TPU. TPU is a PU protected. PU, I think. No.
UPVA? No, that's Windows.
UV. UV.
UV.
UV. Too many letters out there. UV protected. It's also, it's not PVC. So it has memory, and no matter how much I crunch it up, it's not going to crack or tear. So you can really just crumple it up, stuff it in your bag, and take it out when necessary. And the lens hood is very nice, because we have a pull-tight, elastic, flexible sleeve that will attach to the end of the lens, but it will allow the lens to freely move when focusing. And then we have a rigid plastic cuff that will create a hood around it. And just like with a coat, just protrude a little to give you that extra protection, because obviously in front of the lens we can't put anything.
And of course that's one advantage over a carrier bag, is that section we get floppy under the weight of rain.
Yes.
Now for people, just to give people a kind of a mental picture, those of you who used to, or even still do, work in the darkroom and you were using a changing bag to get your film off the spool and what have you, you'll remember the sleeves that you put your arms through. It's the same sort of thing. Of course, you've got where you've got the drawstring here, in the past you would have had elasticated, but that's your approach. Just walking around the back of, to look at the back of the camera here, the visibility is fantastic, because so many of these sort of designs, they have a little window, which by the time you've got rain or the cover is pushed around, that window slips down the back of the camera and what have you. This is from, I mean, this is a good, what, maybe sort of 10 inches of top to bottom.
And we leave it a little area on the inside, because obviously you're going to be working with warm hands inside, and we don't want the condensation to be created on the transparent area. We have three different sizes. We have one small one for a real consumer, small mirrorless cameras with a larger lens on. We have our standard for any DSLR with up to a 200 millimeter lens attached, but it knows how to adapt from a small lens to the zoom lens. And we have a really big one that will fit with a DSLR with a flash on,
okay,
or a DSLR with up to a 300 or 400 millimeter lens attached. We also have an extension kit that can be added to the medium size that will allow up to a 600 millimeter lens attached.
Okay, so if you were wanting to use flash, you are really looking at the larger one. And of course the flash passes straight through there; it doesn't bounce around on
nothing
the inside.
Nothing bounces. It's been tested; no effect whatsoever.
Excellent. Well, that's brilliant. I mean, that's given me a real good idea, better than I've had in previous years, of the Kata range. Give us a website where people can have a look.
Well, you can go to www.kata-bags.com or supporttheexperience.com. That's for National Geographic.
Excellent.
Actually, for National Geographic, we also have geographicbags.com, which would probably be easier to remember.
Well, I'm going to be linking to the show in the show notes to all of these. So anyone that's got any questions, I'd urge them to get in touch with you guys, because definitely well worth checking out, and they're built to last.
Absolutely.
They look great, and functionality.
If you're talking about built to last, then with Kata, you can register online any of your purchases and we'll give you lifetime service.
Well, you can't ask more than that, can you?
You can't ask more than that, and we've got the best customer service out there.
Excellent. Melina, thank you so much for
thank
your time.
You.
Cheers. So I've now caught up with Peter Barge and Will Chung, who's smiling at me because I've just told him that I used to read his articles when I was about 13.
I'm very embarrassed.
Well, you know, it's all good. The reason I've caught up with you guys is, first and foremost, eFotoZine, but we've also got, Will, you better tell me the magazines that you're representing here today, because there's quite a few of them on
the
stand.
Well, I work for Bright Publishing, but the magazine I'm specifically responsible for is Advanced Photographer. Other titles in our portfolio include Photo Professional and DSLR Magazine, but the one I am responsible for is Advanced Photographer.
Okay, so, and for those that don't know, eFotoZine.
Yeah, eFotoZine is an online website for photographers. It's been going 10 years, and we're here to focus for it's probably our seventh time we've been.
Because I was just saying to you earlier, I've always been able to find your stand. You're right sort of at one of the sides, and it's, you know where you are. Now, because you guys have come on board together, it's, you know, it's good. It gives you more of a presence and what have you. But what I want to talk to you guys about is people that are going to come to Focus, they're not all going to be professional. They're not all going to be shooting on high-end kit. They're enthusiastic. They are enthusiasts. They aspire to certain things. And reading magazines, viewing websites, checking out forums, that is where they are going to learn. I'm self-taught. Never did me any harm, as they say, and that's all. So tell me about eFotoZine, first of all, the kind of the key points, what people will find when they land on your site.
Well, on our site, we try to provide an online magazine format, so it has reviews, news, interviews, techniques, there's a gallery, and there's a forum. So unlike a normal newsstand magazine, we have a community as well, and the community is very big. There's something like 140,000 registered members, and they're active daily, posting pictures, chatting to each other.
And that's what it's all about. It's about spreading the word and sharing knowledge.
Yeah, that's right.
And Will, how do you, in a traditional format, in a paper format, how do you, I won't say compete because that's the wrong expression, how do you build on the fact that there are forums, there are all that stuff? What is the equivalent now in your publications?
God, that's a good question. I suppose we try not to compete because it's actually impossible to do so. Mm. So people like Pete's magazine, e-magazine, work really well, and that people can talk to them interactively. But we offer something different in terms of what we are, and that rather than offering a magazine which is aimed at the DSLR beginner entry level, been doing maybe a couple of years, we're aiming our magazine to be slightly higher up the food chain, if you like, in terms of experience, so that our photographers are passionate, they're dead keen about taking pictures, they know about something, simple stuff like, you know, I know I should be shooting raw, but actually I want to get more out of it, so perhaps we take them on from there. So we're spending the other magazines, our rivals, are catering for the relative newcomer to SLR photography, although some of those have been around for a long time. We're actually aiming slightly higher up the experience ladder. So we're assuming less knowledge, and we're assuming that people are actually going to spend money on kit. So to answer your question about what, in terms of offering, we're very different from what websites offer. We offer, you know, great pictures, things you enjoy, But yeah, interviews in a magazine form. And we know, obviously, magazines are under threat from websites. That's the way it is. But there are an awful lot of magazines out there. But what we offer is something different.
So do you presumably have... People love, by the virtue that they're listening to this, they love behind the scenes. They like to hear what guys are doing out there in the field, the sort of kit, the techniques. Do you have featured profiles or photographers that are out there doing their thing that are sharing information that way?
Yes, we do. And we want, obviously, more people to contribute to us. We're a very new magazine. We're only to our fifth issue now. So we're after as much talent as we can to get come on to us and say, look, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Are you interested in featuring my work? Now, what I will say is, rather than approaching from a subject perspective, I'm approaching most of our techniques from a technique perspective, which is very different. So, I was, for instance, a little while ago, a sports photographer said, would you be interested in my work? I go, yeah, but maybe. I'm not interested in featuring a sports photographer. What I'm interested in is featuring somebody who uses, for instance, very slow shutter speeds or rear sync flash or something similar to that. So I'm always going for technique first and great pictures afterwards in this particular magazine. And I think that's what's working for us.
And I think that's interesting because so many magazines now, and I don't know, Pete, whether you're finding this with contributors or people that you've spoken to with other websites or people that just approach you to put their content, you know, submit their content. People think, rightly or wrongly, I've got a great portfolio and that's going to carry me. Now, a lot of magazines, I know this just as a reader in the street, as it were, so many magazines now are following the line where they'll fill six pages just because their nice picture's blown up big, and the actual content value, whether it's technique or the value that they're trying to in their briefing in the office to begin with, it's almost lost somewhere along the way. So do you've said obviously you've got more of the community aspect. Do you encourage people to share their pictures greatly? How does one go about that? Do they post links to, say, Flickr, or do they physically upload their pictures to a gallery?
On our site, on eFotozine, we've got a gallery, and people can upload their pictures. We restrict it to one a day, so everyone gets fair exposure.
Okay.
With Flickr, it's a dumping ground.
Yeah,
there's hundreds of pictures put on, and it's hard to filter through. We also have a feature where you can select favourites. So if you're into landscape photography and you know certain photographers that do landscapes, you can then just favourite those and view their pictures first.
Yeah, and is there any sort of, is there cost involved in that, or is it completely open?
It's completely free.
Okay, so again, we like free, you know. These looks I'm getting from Will. Spending out money is good as well, Will. We don't mind parting with cash if we're going to get the content back, of course.
Well, that's what we'd like to think. I mean, our magazine is priced at £4.95, but we've pushed up the production value, so the paper quality is very good,
sure.
So there's not much show through. I mean, it's very noticeable on some of our competitor titles that the quality of the paper they're using is less good, therefore pictures look less exciting on them. So we've invested in the production values of the title. And yes, it costs money, and we offer something slightly different, but you know, we need to get revenues in to ensure that we can carry on producing the magazine. From our perspective, that's a very simple mechanism. And I guess the same actually is for Pete. He needs to generate revenue somehow. Otherwise, he can't employ his team to produce what he produces.
And I know, just through my layman's view of the magazine market, how it's changed, and so I'm going to remind you again how old both of us are, that I used to read practical photography and all those similar photo answers and all the older titles. It's interesting the way things move, but of course techniques, obviously we've got digital now and there's considerations, but a lot of techniques don't change, and both of you, obviously you're aware of this, and it's something that you need to get across. So whether it's, in conclusion, whether it's a magazine or whether it's online, you're still going to have the market that you want, which is people that want to learn and share.
True.
Indeed, right. I mean, people always want to improve their own work. And it's a passion, it's a hobby for many people, and that's the target market we're going for. And we want people to enjoy their photography. That's the essence of it. It's a hobby. And I think if people start losing their enjoyment of it, do something else. Take up gardening.
Quite right.
It's really simple. I'm talking to people who are actually enjoying their photography. I'm not talking about people who aspire to earn money, but people who just enjoy it as a hobby. And that's what I'm keen on, because I've been doing film, using film for 40-odd years, and I still enjoy photography. And okay, techniques have changed, but some core things, like seeing the picture, composing the picture, are still fundamentally the same. And so those things we can still talk about and work on. And techniques are changing all the time, be it new software, new plugins, new cameras, lenses, whatever. And people are innovating, and we just done a feature on painting with light, people burning wire wool. And with film, people wouldn't have been doing that, but with digital, people do.
Yeah.
And I love it because of that.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up, guys, because I know you're both busy. Will, do you have a website for us?
Well, it's www.advancedphotographer.co.uk, but at the moment it's more of a subscription landing site. Okay. In terms of the magazine, it's available in Smith's and Tesco's, etc.
Excellent. And of course, Pete, give us your website as well.
Ephotozine is www.ephotozine.com.
Lovely. Guys, thanks very much for your time.
Cheers.
I'm actually sat on a sofa, which is by far the most comfortable chat that I've had with anyone at Focus this year. And I'm with Simon Goble on the Moo.com stand. Now, you guys that listen to, I forget the episode number, but a podcast that I put out probably 3 or 4 episodes ago, you knew that I was collecting some cards from Moo, who bailed me out at the last minute. There was a slight change in plan, and basically I was able to pick them up. So, Simon, I love you guys, not to get over sentimental at the end of the day, but tell me, bare basics, what you guys do.
So we would describe ourselves as an online stationer, specialising in digital print, and more specifically in variable print, which is something that we've named Printfinity. So that allows you to put a different image on every card or sticker in a pack. So a pack of 50 business cards can have up to 50 images. So that's
And of course, that's the thing. I know you guys through Focus on Imaging. A few years ago, I was here as I am every year, and you guys were here, and I liked what I saw, and the usual thing, that's a good way to start using a supplier. Now, I know you first and foremost as someone, a company that can produce good business cards. Mm-hmm. I liked the idea that I could upload my own images using your online system. So just tell me a bit about that system.
Yeah,
because it clearly works.
Yeah, it's so easy to use as well. You don't have to be a pro, but we do cater for the pro market as well. So for every single product that we do, you can upload your images directly to us, or you can import them from Flickr, which we've always done. We've also recently launched the integration with Picasa and SmugMug as well. So if you've got your photos on some professional hosting sites, you can import them directly to us, edit them in the canvas, add your details, logo. We've also allowed you to upload a full design to the back of the card. So if you're a Photoshop whiz and you've got a nice logo and a custom font that you use for your business, put that into a Photoshop file, upload it to us, and you've got a fully customized back. And that runs on business cards, the mini cards, which are the kind
of... Oh, yeah, the very narrow...
That's the ones. And postcards now as well. We're allowing you to upload to the back of those, which is kind of giving them a new life as a product.
And in terms of uploading photographs, as a photographer, of course, it's good to have a good spread. It's like a mini portfolio, essentially.
We like to call it a portfolio in your pocket. That's
And you can upload, what, 50 images?
50 images into a pack of business cards. The mini cards come in packs of 100, which means 100 images.
Yeah.
20
postcards.
Have
to have individual
ones. You
can mix and match. I think my last lot, because it was a fairly last minute sort of thing, I ended up having, 14 designs or 14 images spread over 50. So of course you had a few double ups and a few, but that was fine because I've got, funnily enough, I need to speak to you about my own needs because I've got through them just in this show. So, you know, but I know that you guys have got some new products coming out.
That's right.
You might want to tell us a bit about what you've got in mind for the future.
Yeah, certainly. So we already have one sticker product, which are 90 little scratch proof vinyl stickers coming in a cool little book. But people have been saying to us, we want bigger stickers, we want different stickers. So our product managers have spent a long time going over this.
Yeah.
We're launching a round sticker very shortly and some address label stuff. And we're hoping to bring Printfinity, the different image options, onto those products as well. So keep your eyes peeled to the newsletter, which goes out once a week, and to our Twitter feed as well, which is where we share a lot of the new and upcoming updates and stuff from the business.
And I have to say, listeners will know that I'm a big fan of Twitter, of course, and to see some of the links that are not just about Moo.
Nope.
They're just general, and I know that you are the guy that does this.
That's right.
I'll put links in the show notes, of course, for everyone listening.
Wonderful.
But Overheard at Moo, that's you on Twitter. Guys, check it out. There's some really useful links. And it's about photography, design, examples of, for example, artists who have decided that they want to have labels or people that create jewellery that want to have labels, punch a hole in them, attach that by a piece of thread or whatever to their product. And it looks awesome.
But we're constantly amazed at how people take what we produce and then turn it into something else. So whether they're using it for students, for example, at degree shows, hanging our business card boxes on the wall next to their portfolio, or someone, like you say, making like jewellery backs for earrings out of the mini cards. Like, constantly amazed. But I mean, for us, it's all about, the business is about design and innovation, community, and like for us, that's exactly what Twitter is. It's a wonderful communication device for speaking to people around the world who are interested in design and innovation, which is kind of the links we share. Like you say, it's not just about us.
Absolutely.
It's all like design, small business,
it's
and
the
photography
greater
links.
Community.
Totally.
And as we sit here, I mean, I say it's the end of the day. I'm getting far too relaxed. I've had a couple of drinks in the press bar, but it's very fresh, it's very clean, which of course you'd expect it to be because you want to show off your product as it is. Cool blues, whites, very clean lines. But right behind us here, it's not just the printed materials, the cards. You guys do business card holders, you do all these kind of, for want of a better term, knickknacks that actually complement when you're handing out. People forget, if you're going to hand out your cards, you might have spent however much on cards. If you then pick them out of your jeans pocket and they're beaten up around the corners, and I've had a few of those given to me today with apologies, whereas mine are in a nice sort of case and it keeps them smart. What is great is you guys could say, oh yeah, we've teamed up with this company and these are the cases, but they actually complement so well your own product.
So we actually stock a range of cases that we've sourced from other businesses, but we also design our own. So we have an in-house product designer, Paul Thorogood, who designs the mosaic frame, the mini mosaic frame that you can see. Our showcase, which is our new business card holder, allows you to show multiple images from your pack of multiple images. The leather accessories as well. Paul's like sourced some really beautiful leather for some business card and mini card holders. So it's, like I say, it's design is really key to the business, and we take everything really seriously when it comes to making beautiful print products, and then, like you say, the beautiful accessories that complement them as well.
And I have to say, I've lost count of the number of times that I've given out a card, and okay, I'm a photographer, so each card's going to have a nice picture on it. People have said, either that's a nice picture, which, great, that makes me feel good, thank you. but they say that's a really nice card, and I'm sure the key of it to it is it's a simple image with a simple reverse side. Mm-hmm. It says everything it needs to, and nothing else. It is absolute, and that, I guess, is where you're centered with your design, with your functionality of your product.
Totally. We have, you know, quite a flexible system for designing the product, but there, we know what makes a good business card, and we know that what you want. So you can come to us and say, we want to put our logo here, we want to put our text here, and it all just fits nicely, and it's a beautiful way to design it. But like I say, if you are a designer, you can upload a full back to all of our products as well, so you can use your talent and skills to fill in the gaps that we don't currently let you do. Like I said, design is core to everything, so everything you see, including the packaging, we take so much time over thinking about it.
Seriously, guys, the packaging's really nice. It was, even when I collected the cards in person, it was in a little sort of pouch sort of thing to keep it sort of protected, but the boxes alone that you guys put, you know, we've all had rough cards, and I won't mention names, but you know exactly who I'm talking about, that the box they're in doesn't inspire confidence about the contents. But these, they're a nice, firm, I've dropped mine enough times, and they haven't fallen apart, they haven't, split. And it's such little things, and it is a little thing for me, I'm easily pleased, I guess, but that means a lot to me personally, that you've put as much care into your design of your packaging. And again, you guys send stuff out through the mail, so you want to make sure it's going to get there in peak condition.
I mean, we're sending stuff to over 180 countries worldwide, so things are travelling quite a distance sometimes, and we want to know that they arrive you in the way that they leave us. So like you say, we take care with everything we do. Custom packaging is all designed in-house as well, so we have real control over the, you know, our brand and how it comes across. One thing I will add as well is that we've recently launched white label packaging.
Okay.
So if you're a wedding photographer and you want to gift some cards or add them into a package. Mm-hmm. Say you've got a shot of the bride and groom, you want to send them a thank you for your business. We now do these white label boxes that don't have Mu logos on them.
Excellent.
They don't need to know where you've been buying your stuff from or how much you've been paying for it.
Excellent. Well, do you know, it's been really nice to catch up with you because I know we've talked on Twitter and you've sent so many good links, what have you. Parting thoughts, give us your website, make sure everyone knows where you guys are.
Yep, so we're Mu.com, nice and easy to remember, nice and easy to find. And you can find us on Twitter at Overheard at Mu. We're also on Facebook, Tumblr, everywhere you look online you'll find us.
And of course, as I said before, I'm going to link in the show notes to everything you've just sent, and it's all good. Simon, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Look forward to catching up with you again in no time at all, because I need more cards.
Brilliant.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Finally, I have caught up with Owen McAdam over at the Fujifilm stand because, very excitedly, I want to hear all about the X100, which those of you who are on Twitter, those of you that are on Facebook, and those of you that are just following all of the various threads on forums will know that this has caused something of it's a lot of excitement, shall we say, because it's a nice camera for sure, but it's something a bit different. So Owen, tell me exactly what the X100 is.
The X100 is the first digital camera that we have with a fixed lens, Fujinon fixed lens, a 12 megapixel APS-C EXR sensor, so you're getting stunning image quality from the sensor, and also you're getting the EXR kind of flexibility, so all the different functionality you get with the XR, detail, wide dynamic range, and very, very good low light sensitivity as well.
And there's something that I'm just looking up above where we are here. Your writing on your boarding here says, inspired by the beauty and form of classic cameras, powered by the brilliance of groundbreaking technology. And of course, to look at the thing, it is a bit of a stunner in terms of it is so different. Tell us a bit about what went behind the creation of the styling.
The styling is based on classic camera. You know, the style from of a the 1950s, 1960s, classic metal body camera. So you've got all the functionality of all the controls are there. It looks brilliant. On top, you've got machine knurled dials, which are very easy to control, giving you full control of the camera straight away, all at your fingertips. The body itself is magnesium alloy, so combined with the stunning looks, you've got fantastic durability as well.
And of course, just to paint a picture for people, of course people are going to be aware of the Leica brands. We all know Leica rangefinders. Think in terms of the Trip 35 back in the 60s. Now, of course, we know that Fujifilm pioneer technology. We know that your lenses have always been very good, very sharp. It's not that it is by any means a copy. It's not that it's taken bits from other cameras. It is in its own dimension in terms of what you've done with it. But are you guys finding that there is this? Is there a resurgence in retro styling again? Is there kind of a background to that?
No, I think it was just a decision of how do we style a camera? How do we present a camera that has a fixed lens, no zoom lens on it, and a very, very high quality technology inside it. And the decision was made to go down to a classic camera style to reflect the quality you have in it, give it some the outside image of it,
and
high quality.
And when I was shooting 6x7 film before the jump to digital, I was using a rangefinder, and to actually use, and this is a rangefinder design, but obviously with modern sort of tweaks to it, there is something very nice. And anyone that's looked at, say, Cartier-Bresson, the way that he worked, pivoting on the tips of his toes for a split second to get the shot, working with a fixed, and this is something people often forget, if you just have a fixed focus lens, it makes you look at the world, look at your subject, and get everything out of those subjects that you can. If you stand sort of 40 feet away with a zoom lens, that's a complete change. So tell me a bit about how you've brought the rangefinder design and given it kind of a modern sort of take on that.
Well, inside the the camera is a very clever viewfinder system. This combines an optical viewfinder and an electronic viewfinder with a prism arrangement, so you can choose to either view your subject through the optical viewfinder, which is great for framing, giving you an idea of what's in the frame, or you can switch to the EVF electronic viewfinder and view through the actual lens. That's what that works particularly well with is when you're trying to just concentrate on the focus.
Yeah.
And it very clearly shows you focus and gives you a very good idea of depth of field as well. So it gives you a preview of what depth of field you're actually going to get in the image.
And on the back of the camera, we've got the LCD on there. Is that about 2.5, 3 inches, something like that?
Yeah, 3-inch LCD on the back.
Nice and bright,
very bright, yeah. Very sharp, very high resolution. And combine that with the viewfinder inside, which is also very high resolution. Viewing images through the cameras, you know, it's stunning.
And in terms of recording those images, what formats you've got, RAW as well as JPEG?
It will shoot RAW and JPEG. Mm-hmm. Or you can set it to shoot JPEG only, and there is a specific button that you can press, and it will shoot the next shot as RAW.
Okay.
And then revert back. So if you just want to shoot JPEG and occasionally shoot RAW, you can do that.
Excellent.
If you want to shoot JPEG constantly, shoot that, or you can shoot RAW and JPEG.
And
constantly.
People are going to ask, what about autofocus? What about focusing systems?
It's got full autofocus, constant and single shot, and it's got manual focus with a manual focus
ring
on the
front. And more people should shoot manual focus, especially if they're shooting with a fixed lens. It's a great discipline.
Exactly.
You know, just put it on f/11 exactly. And know your distances.
If you want to really get back to, you know, the basics of photography, focusing, setting aperture, setting shutter, seeing what results you get, this is, you know, a brilliant way to do that.
Excellent. So just to talk about the release of the camera, availability, I'm a little bit cloudy on this myself. I know there's been a lot of hype. We had other shows abroad where it's been previewed, released, all the rest of it. People that are listening to this that have probably seen it in the media, maybe have got your newsletter, when can people be getting their hands on it, and what can they expect sort of time-wise? Is it out now to be...
The camera's been announced now, obviously, and availability we're probably looking at will be during April.
Okay, so not too long.
Not too long, this is future, people will be able to get their hands on it.
I think you've just made a load of people fall off their seats because it's long awaited. So, Owen, thank you so much for your time.
A pleasure.
Hopefully, guys, that's given you a little bit of an insight into this new camera. I know I'm very excited to be taking a closer look at it, and there'll be a link in the show notes to the Fuji website, which is... Owen, do you have
www.fujifilm.co.uk?
And I think there's a separate site just for the X100.
Yeah, if you go onto the website, there's a link there, it goes straight into this specific X100.
Excellent.
Website.
So it's all going to be there, guys. And any questions, of course, forward them through. And we'll see if we can answer some of them and give you a bit more information. Owen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.